Greetings and welcome to the Pure Report. I'm your host, Rob Ludeman. It's time to bring the orange with, well, with something that we're trying that's new. You are going to get to be the first to hear our coffee break rewind. Yes, one of the cool things about having a podcast program umbrella is that you can try new things. You've been very familiar, have been listening for a while for our regular episode format. Typically me interviewing someone or some other interesting people together. And then we brought on Andrew and JD for the Unplugged, and I've had Justin Emerson give us some guest content from time to time. And now with Andrew Miller approaching me recently, he suggested something really cool. And so we're going to try that out, his very successful coffee break webinar series. Going forward, we're going to start posting that here in the Pure Report channel, because we know some of you maybe don't have time to attend the webinar live based on your busy schedules. And even then, maybe you forget to go back and to watch the replay when we put it out. So really excited to bring this to you. We're going to call this Coffee Break Rewind. Andrew does one of his coffee break webinars every month, and so therefore we'll be posting one of those every month. This episode is from March and features a look around cyber. It was called Choose Your Own Restore Adventure around Pure's Modern Data Protection Portfolio, featuring the great Jason Walker, who's been on our program here before. He looks after cyber resiliency and is now working in our enterprise line of business. He and Andrew go through trends, through history, through different objectives that companies have around data protection, and then kind of where Pure plays and how it can benefit you. So we do hope that you enjoy catching up with the Coffee Break webinar series here, and we'll be posting these, as I said, monthly, and just another way for you to consume all the great content that we have. Coffee Break's been very successful, has a great following, great audience, and this is another way that you can catch up with the Coffee Break content with the great host, Andrew Miller. So with that, and no further ado, except that I will say, go register for Accelerate, purestorage.com/accelerate. We would love to see you there. I know I promote that in every episode, but now with no further ado, let's get to the Coffee Break content, and you will go right into Andrew's replay and eventually start talking to Jason Walker. So have some fun with this. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, thank you for listening to the Pure Report. Enjoy the show.
I think Mr. Walker.
Hey,
you're Jason to me. Jason Walker. I think we're live here.
Mr. Walker. That was only when I was going to the principal's office when I was in school. Mr. Walker, go to the principal's office.
Thinking of for those joining, as hopefully you always know, we always click the start button a couple minutes before the hour, just so we can kind of riff a little bit, have a relax a little bit with 1,000 or so of our closest friends here. Thank you for joining us today. This is the March. It is March. Sometimes you have to think about the March 2024 coffee break. Choose your own restore adventure. I'm Andrew Miller, joined by Jason Walker. We're not starting yet. This is just the opening. Please feel free, if you're joining us, to put into the chat, you know, where you're joining us from, what you're hoping to hear about, even anything that you'd like to, you know, share with some of your closest friends and peer customers and partners and people who might be interested in peer, you know, whatever that is, or you're not a peer customer yet, you know, because we don't limit this down. I think, Jason, I'll start here, and then I'll go to you next. I am doing this month Starbucks Light, I think it's blonde cold brew that has higher caffeine, and I do have it in the very nice ornamental Pure mug. And I realized, I'm not sure something's going wrong here.
It's a feisty crowd already coming in, Andrew. Yeah. They're coming in firing, guns blazing, saying I'm not the real Walker. There's looks like one of my cousins in the chat in there claiming to be the real Walker in there. I happily yield. I mean, I am simply that. I just know I have a license to jaywalk in any city. Do you know that? My license clearly says jaywalk on it. So.
And we'll get the video back there just in one second. There was one minor issue there, but I think we'll have that resolved here. And there we go. Okay. I can still see you. You can still see me. That was a fun little quirk there, but that's why we start early, you know, so you can resolve those if needed.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, coming in fire. Love it.
San Francisco, VA, New York. And actually, so I think, man, I'm not even sure how to go here now, Jason, but you were, there was something about, you know, you were looking down at your phone and I was complimenting on your,
wonderfully we're previous to the call starting, the webinar starting, we can let all these folks, the early birds getting the worm. I often will keep my phone down off camera. And in case, you know, something comes up, I've got, you know, if I've got food hanging off the side of my face, Andrew can let me know without saying it on camera. So I keep checking, but it does require me to bend my head down. And Andrew noticed quite a good shine.
Wonderful shine.
Yeah. I go down to the local bowling alley and shine it up. It's like they do it. It adds like 2 to 3 inches on my curve when I head down the alley. It's good stuff.
Very good. With that, I think we're at 2 p.m. That feels just about right. Chris Topper, I do see your raised hand. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to put them in chat or the Q&A. Either way, we do have amazing folks here to help with that. Roger Boss, Ben Kendall, and Olivia. And with that, I will go ahead and we'll take a quick pause here just in case we ever need to cut this in the future and get going. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome to Choose Your Own Restore Adventure, Pure's Modern Cyber Resiliency Portfolio. My name is Andrew Miller, your host, lead principal technologist here at Pure. I'm joined this month by Jason Walker. I think global practice leader, cyber resiliency. That sounds kind of fancy and fun, but I think that's you these days.
It is fancy and fun. Can confirm.
All of those together. We will do a little bit of housekeeping as we always do. Thank you all so much for joining us. This is Coffee Break. It is a series that we do each month. And believe it or not, it's hard to believe we are actually into year 4. We celebrated our 3rd anniversary. Depending on how you count it, I think this might be episode 39 or so. The reason I note that is because we've tried to keep more of a solution focus. Frankly, the first half, you know, we focus more on the landscape and lessons learned, and even sometimes career and mentoring discussion. And then the second half, we discuss where Pure fits in that landscape. Because of that approach, I think, and gotten feedback from many of you, that this is aged better than average. So you can find all the recordings on different topics here. You can also find both for Coffee Break and other series on purestorage.com/events to register, and also to see historic ones as well. Now, you may be joining us for this thing called a coffee card. I get it. If so, thank you. The first 1,000 folks to register to attend will receive a $10 coffee e-gift card. At the end, we will be having a drawing for the Coffee Lovers gift set, a Yeti mug with a Pure logo and a Metropolis coffee bag. If you are folks in these categories, we appreciate you being here. But as you probably know, we can't send you gifts. So hopefully you recognize that up front. A little bit of introductions as we start in. So I'm your host, Andrew Miller. Been here at Pure right about 5 years now, actually just about the same time as Jason. For this standpoint, I think about, we're talking about kind of data protection and cyber resiliency. You know, I started out of college, some of you know this, actually as a backup admin because no one wanted to do backups. What a surprise. And then even became actually the security admin before he hired some of the CISSP. So this goes back to, I was thinking about firewalls and antivirus and even, you know, single points of failure. And sometimes you'd say like, ooh, if someone compromised my credentials, what could they do with that? Those are scary thoughts when you have domain admin and full, you know, network and eDirectory privileges. A little bit crazy. I'm really glad, though, to have back as a guest this time, Jason Walker, because, Jason, you were kind enough to hold down the fort in December when I was in Singapore visiting family. But this time you're back to talk about the day job. So I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yeah. And I, as a friendly inside joke to Mr. Miller, feel free to comment on the guys you see in the picture there, myself not included, and see if you know who those fellows are. In there, I had to educate Mr. Miller about who those folks were. Absolutely. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it's been great. It's been a fun 5 years, Andrew Miller. It's been a great 5 years. And we have overseen quite an explosion in, you know, what we're calling cyber resiliency. Gloria Perez knocking it down. Named all three people in the picture. Which
Montana, Marino. Yep, you got it. Look at that.
you know, it's been great fun. We've had a lot to talk about over 5 years. There's been a lot of things that have come on. You know, I thought there was a lot of change, Andrew, going into 2019 when we both joined Pure Storage, and we've seen so much more even since then. Mm-hmm. In there, just a preview, like a tease, if you will. of what's to come in the show.
Part of what we're going to go through, a little bit of kind of history and lessons learned what we've seen. So as always, thank you again for being here. Sure. Because this is a series, I always want to make sure to highlight next month. So next month, we're going to be talking about all things artificial intelligence, the landscape. There may even be some analytics relationship in there because this is about data in different ways. So I'll have Miroslav Klavansky, Global Practice Leader for AI and Analytics, joining me. And the title, as it shows there, you know, Gen AI, generative AI, if I can say it, RAG. If you know what RAG is, feel free to put that in the chat, because that is one of the newer, cooler, hotter buzzwords that it's good to know. I'll just be a little bit of a tease here and not say, well, say what? Say what is it? But going beyond the AI buzzwords to business value, you've also got the QR code. And Olivia is right on the spot there. She has the link in the chat there for you to register, because hopefully you enjoy this, or you see this as a series that you keep getting value from. With that, let's dive into this month. Choose your own Restore Adventure Modern Cyber Resiliency Portfolio. As always, we try and keep, unless there's good reason to change, try and keep a little bit of a standard approach, a standard agenda. It's worked well over the years. And like it says there, you know, when your CEO stops in your office, whether it was the file from payroll or it's a ransomware recovery, you know, it's all about the today cyber resilient recovery. It's not how fast can you back it up. It's how fast can we come back online? Can we potentially stop losing money? We're going to explore four areas. First, what is this place? You'll see why we're calling it that. A little bit of like, where, how do we actually get here? Trends through history. We'll take it up there kind of through roughly about the age of VMware and open systems. And then we'll dial in a little more briefly on some of the recent changes. Or actually, can you help me with, I'm just having trouble pronouncing the first part of that, Jason. Can you help me?
Which one? The changes.
Time. Somehow you knew what I was referring to.
I knew what you were saying.
You could have done it.
R.I.P. David Bowie.
This is where I kindly exhort you to don't quit the day job. Yeah, other things, but no, but fair. You played along. Thank you,
Marty. Marty knows. Real ones know, Marty. Thank you.
So about now, the bigger recent trends around the advent of cloud and ransomware, and what those are, two big items had a huge impact in this space. Then diving into, from a pure standpoint, we're going to embrace a little bit of a scenario-driven approach, you know, kind of a little bit of a choose-your-own-adventure, if you remember those books going back in the day, or maybe choose-your-own-restore-adventure with Pure. And then last but not least, call it bonus features, or maybe what's new with cyber resiliency and Pure. Some of these are actually going to be items that we've mentioned before, but candidly not been able to spend as much time on. So it's worth exploring a little bit more, and we keep investing in this space truly as folks, Jason and myself, we do have insight into Pure's roadmap and investment priorities, and we're not making up that this is a focus for Pure. And of course, please make sure to put Q&A in throughout. We'll have some time for Q&A at the end. We have Ben and Olivia and Roger here to help with Q&A live as well, so you don't have to wait for us to get to it kind of thing or to see it. But before we dive into the first section, let's start off with the first poll, if you'd be so kind, Olivia. There we go. So 25 years ago, I don't want to influence the audience here, Jason, but what were you most concerned about, or what were you protecting against?
Yeah. You know, the thing that I'm still concerned about to this day is the last one there. Giant ants.
So for the first time, this is a real little bit of a replay of anyone who appreciates Norm Macdonald and the style. Jason is chanting a little bit of Norm Macdonald. Don't go listen to the greatest highlights of Norm Macdonald on YouTube. Do that after we finish coffee break too. But also, maybe 20 years ago, how large was your average restore? Because man, there's been some changes there. We'll leave the poll up. That's what we do. So you can kind of respond to that as we go along. But let's start off with a little bit of how we got here. Because if I said the word cyber resiliency or cyber anything 20 years ago, it had this very different meaning. And actually, Jason, when you and I were working together, actually recently doing some SE training enablement in Chicago. Yeah. Chicago. You actually had this thing about, you know, kind of what is this place? And it's like, well, that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a real sentence or question yet. Yet you will hear what is this place in every movie you ever go to see. And I didn't believe it until I swallowed whatever color pill took me into what is this place, and now I hear it everywhere, Mr. Miller. And I'm not the only one. I believe some people have even commented, "What is this place?" and put videos out there that lend credibility to my claim that you'll hear this everywhere.
Like this.
We have a clip. We have a clip. It's a clip show.
Do you know where you're going to?
What is this place?
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 There's actually a full 97 seconds for you to
It's the longest 97 seconds of anybody's life. In there, that's for sure. What is this place? But it is applicable to data protection. You can say that cyber resiliency, you can say as bad as things have completely changed. Even in 20, a lot of folks are like me, we've been doing this 25 years or so. Hate to give you guys flashbacks, don't want to trigger you, but it is kind of, you can walk in and it is a gigantic prairie of solutions out there calling cyber resilience. What is this place?
So there was backup. There was resiliency. Historically, yeah, those were very separate things. So let's maybe embrace them for a minute as separate things before we start to pull them together. And
yeah, back, you know, when,
so where did it start for you, Jason?
25 years. Yeah, we go back 25 years, and it was kind of binary. You had your backups that went to probably tape if you go as far back as we do. And, but you also had, you know, your high availability. You had SRDF, you had all kinds of that. And that was pretty much, you had that and you had backup. And that was probably the, that is the caveman era of cyber resiliency, Andrew.
I think for you, that was even Seagate backup.
Yeah,
I go back to the origination of tape. I actually started with Super DLT, and then DLT before Super DLT, and in some ways it was really the age of backup Windows too, right? There was a lot of focus around data reduction. There was even one kind of slide that we pulled out of the vault about, you know, backup or restore. It was even really kind of more about backup than restore. There was a whole product category, the purpose-built backup appliance, that they're still around there, but it wasn't built for restores. And we're not knocking on competitors. It's just, it wasn't built for it. It was built to meet backup Windows.
That's right. I mean, it was all about multiplexing and getting things off the host fast enough, image level backups. It was all about optimizing to get the insurance policy done inside of your operation window. Either nightly or in over the weekend also. And clay tablets, that's it. I mean, Roger Boss knows. I mean, we're chiseling them in the back room to do backups. But it was all optimized about protecting the, you know, fill in the blank. You know, at the time, what, Andrew, if you had a few terabytes of data, I mean, that was, holy cow, you were probably a gigantic, you had a gigantic operation. So it was all about trying to keep that. And then you had tape libraries that you had to keep the heads busy. So that's where the multiplexing came in. But Andrew, when you multiplexed, you had to take the time to untie all that on a recovery. And you always had this gigantic recovery tax on everything you did, but it didn't matter because it really was just about getting things off, you know, getting things, the insurance policy box checked before the operation window closed.
So let's even there kind of, I'll pull that one more thread further before we're still wandering this section. So let's think about what we, and to everyone in the audience too, at that point in time, you know, up till maybe 10 years ago, give or take, what were we protecting against? I'll let you go first before I dive in. Like, what were the most common things, scenarios we were protecting against?
Yeah, I'm sure. Just judging from the kind of people we have in chat here, we all went through this together. You know, we were protecting against, you know, losing a file, you know, somebody in finance or accounting, you know, an IT person would be working in the cube next to them. And then the next day, this other person would be like, that guy lost my file. He did something to the network and I lost my spreadsheet. Or Boy, I had an email. Remember, you know, losing email, a single email was a big deal in there, and trying to get that squared away. We were really protecting about onesie, twosie type recovery, maybe an entire server. What happens if a server went down? Mm-hmm. We talk about bare metal recovery, that kind of thing, you know? And there was a lot of that kind of, focus in terms of recovery was really just about making sure you didn't lose that one, you know, that one item in there that could get lost.
So I think that a little bit about lessons learned. And now this is even stories and maybe even career stories. I mean, for me, some of the lessons learned from that era, and I still channel this into later stuff. You may have heard me talk about is like, you know, I was the guy who came in every morning. I'd see the wall of red failed backup jobs. And I'd be like, really? I just fixed all this yesterday. And I'm a sad panda, sad backup panda every morning kind of thing.
Right.
But that is what for me drove home the value of simplicity. And if what you rely on for your day-to-day stuff takes lots and lots of day-to-day care and feeding, AKA it's complex enough with lots of different people in the kitchen, cooks in the kitchen, it's not going to be there any given time you need it. Because that was when I also learned, how do you find out what you're not backing up? Probably when someone comes to ask you for restore, right? And you're like, ooh, maybe I messed up. Maybe you never told me. You know, so the value of simplicity and policy-driven approaches. For me, that was kind of the lesson out of this era. Any lessons do you have, Jason, from this era?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, when we talk about compliance and everything else, I mean, there was very little kind of compliance. Compliance was just making sure that box was checked. You know, you take those tapes and you would hand it to the person at the front desk and they'd put it in their car and you know, just terrible handling techniques. No wonder tape wasn't resilient back then. But we really, I mean, things have come a long way since those days. But what lesson, what did you take away from that era, Mr. Miller?
Well, I think the other piece, and I was even, I think I got this from you, but again, I make it my own now. So it was just, okay. We had, in some cases, relatively simple software. Like I even did stuff with rsync back in the day, which isn't backup per se, right? But so, and even your time, I think I'm allowed to say that you were at Commvault and Druva, yeah, and sort of, like you've been doing this for a little while.
All on LinkedIn anyway.
It's all public.
It's
but
all there.
As the software kept going, there were more and more features added, because people were asking for them and because they needed them. And right. So for any given person to jump into the latest version of the software, it was almost hard to imagine anyone doing that because there was so much layered over time and so much complexity. It was a challenging landscape. And you go to dedicated classes like I did to learn Tivoli Storage Manager before it became IBM Spectrum Protect.
Right. And to take advantage of some of the newer tech at the time, you showed that slide, writing the disk was a big deal. I mean, because you wanted to take advantage of the randomness of disk, but software wasn't built for that. I mean, software was still treating disk like tape, and that the advent of the VTL and treating disk like tape, you lost some of the speed. And as data started to grow and you wanted to take advantage of it, we started to see the very beginnings, Andrew, of how things would be changing more rapidly and data growing and the challenges that would be associated, because people, like you said, just couldn't jump in and bring in something like Commvault that went, disk to tape, or, you know, you write to disk as a primary target. It took a lot of planning. And even then, when data was a lot smaller, now, you know, we think about data being a lot larger now, but it was the beginnings of seeing some of that adjustment in the market.
Man, the last thing I'll note here is just, I remember putting in an R200. Anyone's been doing this for a while would know what product I'm talking about, intentionally leaving out company names just to be good. But we put that in to have a full 30 days of disk tier for restores. And it was really cool when I did it. It was neat. It was fun. But I think you gave me my segue into chain. No, I'm not even going to try. Changes. I'll just stick with changes.
Oh, we were so close to getting an Andrew Miller solo song there, everybody. You almost witnessed history right here on Coffee Break. Amazing.
Before we dive there, I'll close up and share poll one, because that's part of what we do with these. You can see what everyone else says, you know, a sense of the Coffee Break community that you're part of, if you will. I mean, it's an easy community to join. It doesn't take a high level of commitment. But so 25 years ago, some of this is having a little bit of fun, but I was kind of expecting, to be honest, maybe backup tapes, John or Sally. We do have a healthy representation for giant ants, Jason. Kudos.
I think everybody understands that. Kudos to the 21% their members with fiber-seeking backhoes. The kudos to you. And of course, I'm glad I'm not the only one concerned with the scourge of giant ants.
20 years ago, average restore. There's an easy winner there. Medium, a server or file share. And that feels about right. Second was, you know, a couple files here and there, et cetera. And yes, North American fiber-seeking backhoes. I won't be offended if anyone goes and Googles that. There's some great images.
Very day. There. Still an issue. Look it up.
It's a non-endangered species kind of thing in that Audubon or National Geographic style. With that, Olivia, do you mind? I'll stop sharing this one. Olivia, do you mind launching poll number two? Thank you. So fast there. Wonderful.
Yes. Now we're getting to the bottom of things.
We're launching into cloud and ransomware as the big impact items. And there's sometimes a little bit of a joke, is it on-prem, on-premise? Because it's only one premise. If some of you subscribe to Tech Field Daily, you'll hear this. And a little bit more seriously, if you joined us 5 or 6 months ago, you may have seen this question before. That was intentional because we're actually going to do some year-over-year comparison on this. So about seeing the impact of a ransomware attack. So Jason, with that, I think let's wander into, so, you know, that brings us up to before, maybe kind of the era of tape, purpose-built backup appliances, disk-based backup, the advent of VMware and all the changes there and open systems. But then we had these huge trends around cloud and around ransomware. And for those listening, we chose these kind of intentionally because as we were thinking about it, these feel like in the last 5 to 10 years, the two biggest trends that have really just rocked the landscape in major ways. I mean, I was previously at a company that, and actually still, literally built a company, Tech Unicorn, public soon, maybe, who knows, around these trends. But I think before I keep going, I'll turn it over to you, Jason, for opening commentary here.
Yeah, I mean, you could look back at the turn of the century, you could easily say VMware was the big thing. And we certainly, as a market, adjusted to how to protect that and what the critical pieces and parts of making that a resilient and making sure that was up and running. But say, you know, definitely since then, the next two ones, definitely cloud and of course ransomware. With cloud, it was interesting because it was just, you know, a lot of times in the market, it was just another target. There was a lot of uncertainty about it. Softwares were not really optimized to make that a part of their ecosystem, even softwares like Commvault and that tried to take advantage of it. There were adjustments that had to be made. There were a lot, and there still are today, but Andrew, lots of lessons learned as we began to get into public cloud and, you know, with partners and obviously large, you know, hyperscale, you know, hyperscalers, et cetera, getting involved in that. There were a lot of stuff, and we still to this day are chasing new solutions to the cloud to solve problems. Definitely a big deal there. And of course, nothing changed the landscape of where we work and as IT professionals, as technical professionals, than ransomware, because we went from, you know, worrying about that single file or that single email type of recovery. And it seemed like, especially around 2015, things shifted overnight to where now it's you had your annual DR tests, and sometimes you did them, sometimes you didn't. You'd go to SunGuard and it'd be like 20, maybe 20, my top servers, my top applications that had to get brought back up. And it completely shifted, Andrew, to where you're talking about 50, 75, 100% of the data center being recovered, and really brought a bigger picture. We always had BCDR, but it brought an even bigger picture of resiliency to the forefront.
I'll kind of embrace both of those in order to a little bit. And I know we'll go back and forth. So
yep.
Thinking about cloud, it was both the protecting data outside of my data center. And how can I do that? I've got to think about wind pipes and cost and speed and maybe dedupe in other ways. Or then thinking about, well, I've got data in my data center. I want to keep it longer. I want to leverage cloud economics. I want to send longer term retention or archive or protection to the cloud. So cloud both as a protection point and as a target, the target often being, frankly, cloud economics to help reduce data protection costs. That was actually, you know, if you, You can do this. You can. I did a deep dive at one point for a previous company on a feature called Cloud Out, which was all about really intelligently putting up the differences and backup chains and how it gets sent up into S3 or object. There are huge trends that were like company right. creating trends around some of those. And even we've embraced some of this in Coffee Break too. So this is going to be a little bit of a callback to
Clip Show.
The back catalog. Yeah, it's a clip show of Jack Hogan. I've had him on multiple times to kind of discuss, not necessarily from a cyber resiliency standpoint, but around all the different options as it relates to cloud. Obviously, Top Pure can help, but this is on premises. It's both bare metal and hosted. It's a level of hybrid. It's a level of public. I think we've gotten to the point where the answer is yes. It's not which one. It's what percentage blend in any given application may move and shift over time. That that's reality. Just like we still have mainframes in our data centers. No, nothing in IT ever goes away. It just shifts and changes how it gets used. I think about from a ransomware standpoint, this one almost, I feel like I'm being careful here because, man, this is such a relevant topic that we've explored it from Andy Stone last year, escaping ransomware jail before, during, and after. Had Hector on. Actually, Andy was 2 years ago, a year and a half. Hector on, you know, white hat hacker. You may remember him going through a lot of trends. Even I remember from him talking about that there are actually ISPs in Africa that can do text message spoofing. Or we talk about MFA fatigue. Someone, you know, compromises a password and does 10 requests and finally you accidentally click yes in your preferred MFA choice, Okta or something else. And then even embraced it with what we've been doing from a DevSecOps standpoint internally with Retinder. But often I come back to some of this, and this is where I'll go through. You're going to get the 2-minute version of what sometimes is 30 minutes with people. But thinking about that, attackers are in for a while trying to get access. And then it's really about trying to recover to right before the point of encryption. And especially in the scenario where now more recently, unfortunately, we've seen that attackers are trying to trash the means of recovery because that's what they do. So they're trying to destroy the backups. They're trying to destroy the snapshots, break backups. They may often don't trash the primary data because that's what they want to encrypt to charge you a ransom. But there are some really challenging scenarios there. And to, I think what we were talking about in section number one, Jason, it's with systems that weren't designed for this scale of recovery. The disaster recovery systems were built for this stuff, the business continuity, not the backup and recovery. So it's kind of forced these worlds together in ways that didn't happen in the past. Back to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. All the lessons we've learned from all of those, you know, around costs and you know, with cloud, we were treating it like a DR site. And it is from some point, but there were things sometimes that some companies did from a procedure standpoint that didn't make sense, like leveraging it as a warm site. And then, you know, we saw the costs of compute and egress. We're like, okay, well, hold on. And there was an adjustment period of how best to take advantage of that. And then, like you said, with ransomware preparation, it would used to be, we'll just let the backup guy sit in the corner somewhere and we won't, you know, we don't, just he's doing the backups. And as long as we got that monthly report upline to show that we were successfully backing up, that's all that the C-level needed to know about it. Well, that should be completely over with. Now we're doing, you know, regular tabletops, annual tabletops with executives to make sure everybody is online and in sync with what the strategy is in case you're attacked. Less, still about loss, but not just about loss. Now you have all these other vectors and you know, bad actors and what have you that you have to account for in this strategy.
And there are even some things here. I'll make my last comment here, then we'll jump in. I'll give you a last word too. But there are even some spots in this landscape that at an industry level, we still don't have, we don't have good answers for ransomware in general anyway, because otherwise it wouldn't still be a trend. Like as Pure, we have things we can help you with. That's the next section. We'll get to it. But even things like exfiltration, if the attacker's been in for weeks and months and they're looking at exfiltrating private data, there are approaches and tools to use for that, but that's really hard to categorically solve. So as an industry, we're still moving and morphing. And this is why, for better or worse, if cloud was and probably still is something of a board level priority, ransomware cyber resiliency will only continue to be that because of how the landscapes keep shifting here in really challenging ways to solve for.
Yeah. Just like we're never going back to just using tape. as a solution. There's no going back from this, overarching plan and resiliency plan that you should have out there, and to continually tighten it up and have a process for tightening that cycle. I saw somebody in here say, it's not a matter of if, but when. It's true. But I would add, it's not just a matter of when, but how often, and how do you improve every time you go through an attack cycle? It's not, I always say, it's not the chicken pox, Andrew Miller. You're not going to go through an attack and then say, oh, that was horrible, but thank God it's over. It's more, that you're actually more likely at that point, as we pointed out many times, that you're more likely to get hit again. So let's keep the cycle and be more prepared every time around.
So that, before we jump into section number three, I'm gonna go back here. We'll get to poll three here in a second. I'm gonna end this poll and share it back out for everybody. The first one, I'll just let everyone have fun with it. I do actually say on-prem more, just because it means I don't have to think as much when I'm trying to say something, just in case someone in the room, it's a hot button topic for them how you say it. So, but in this case, more probably a number two. So for 43% of you, you have seen firsthand multiple times. And if I add in the 30% that's once, 73% of the audience. And I'm hoping, by the way, the reason we structure Coffee Break this way is, well, we're now about to jump to what Pure does. You'll see that here. The goal is to give you some lessons learned, some insight from your peers, even things to think about. Like we were talking about tabletop. And if you're here and you don't know what a tabletop exercise is, please go dig into that. And hopefully this will be the trigger for you to learn and dig into something worthwhile. With that, let's go ahead. I'll stop sharing here. And Olivia, if you could share poll number three. Actually, I'll go to poll number three there. So does your company focus? And if you're wondering, do these seem similar? These are actually quite related to ones that we did last year. But we wanted to both actually chart a little bit over time and thought it would be worthwhile for everyone here to see the results of these when we get there. So moving into choosing your own adventure with Pure. Sometimes I'll say this, your own restored venture. Sometimes I'll say your own cyber resiliency adventure. This is, by the way, for anyone who remembers these books growing up, kind of thing. If you read them straight through, it kind of made your head hurt. But maybe you did it enough times, you're like, I'm just going to read it through and see all the variations, kind of thing. So what we wanted to do in this section is there is a lot that Pure can do in ways that we can help. We continue investing in this. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with a little bit of some of the building blocks, some of them that we've talked about in the past here. And then I'm going to toss it, Jason, a couple scenarios. Like, what are the scenarios that you would think about here? And then we may move the slides around to follow that, because it's more a discussion than like, here's the script. So thinking about building blocks, we have building blocks that are fully within Pure's domain. Okay, so these are on-box capabilities. We have things. This shows, for instance, FlashArray. There's synchronous replication, zero RPO and RTO. Hopefully you know what those are if you're joining us today. You have continuous replication, streams across, async, snapshot driven. You can send things off to the cloud. You can do local snapshots, and those are immutable, and those are amazing, and refer to other Coffee Breaks about them. And then even levels with streaming backup and restore. We can assemble those pieces into what sometimes we'll call a tiered resiliency architecture with, say with safe mode. So that is the, even if someone has admin credentials to a Pure system, heaven forbid, they can't totally remove the points of protection. We may have layers that are, on flash. We'll talk about why we might do that for backups or snapshot warehouses. Of course, classic DR with a higher level of protection, thanks to safe mode, and maybe even a data bunker. And then, of course, I wouldn't want to leave out that we partner. So there's a little bit of a variation of those, but we have a lot of partners from the data plane standpoint. I'm pretty sure I've heard you say it's all hands on deck. I'll let you say it again later, since I borrowed it from you. You borrowed from me. All hands on deck when it comes to this. So we work heavily with multiple data protection partners that, frankly, while in the past, some of the ones that have been around for a while doing this, you said, oh, they're backup and recovery or they're data protection. But they keep adding in new really cool capabilities around cyber resiliency, where they were built around it, for crying out loud. That's where the generation that they started in. So I think, Jason, if it's all right, I'm going to just wander back here for a second, and I'll start off with, let's start with ransomware. It feels like that's top of mind. So maybe let's explore a ransomware recovery scenario, because there are some challenging aspects there. How would you address that scenario?
Well, I mean, it's a question that everybody should be asking themselves. How am I prepared for any kind of attack? So, you know, let's take, it could be, you know, just an attack on the primary arrays, could be getting access. Mm-hmm. They could be trying to encrypt some things in there. So, I mean, you're protecting yourself by identifying, you put visibility. That's a very key concept, visibility. Yes. Into the data that you have. So you know which ones, what data is your most valuable and most critical, what's the most costly if it's down, and you identify that, and hopefully you're protecting it with a certain level of initial resiliency, like a snapshot in there. Then you can add some extra protection and security to that level of resiliency by applying something like with Pure, it's a safe mode, protecting those snapshots, which gives you an off gap, and it provides a level of, you know, human intervention to protects you against manual eradication, protects you against any sort of shenanigans with scheduling and things like that, right? So, I mean, it could be that. It could be the attack there. But, Andrew, you know, what's funny is that, you know, as things progress and as our solutions progress, you know, the market develops new solutions. And one of those solutions was cyber insurance. You know, well, let's insure against the downtime. Let's insure against mm-hmm. data loss. And as that came to be, you know, being a human society, there began to have a level of fraud involved in filing claims. Oh. Well, it's true. So yes, as people yes, tried yes. to game the system in there, you know, the insurance companies and if it's a federal data or something, the FBI might get involved, and they say, all right, you've got this array, but you can't do anything with that array until our adjusters get there or until the FBI shows up and takes a look at that. So, you know, maybe this just one tier isn't enough. Maybe we should look at building some additional tiers. So maybe you have a second site like here where you say, okay, I'm going to replicate snapshots or, you know, or have some high availability and have some extra protection there so that maybe that second site we can work off in there. So in a ransomware attack, you could have it in tier one or tier two, or you might have to go to tier three, your backup and recovery tier, and begin to do instant recoveries and begin to work live as this comes up. And you're protecting those also. If you've got repositories, you should be protecting those with everything that those softwares have to offer, as well as Pure. We do say all hands on deck because it is all hands on deck. But more and more as we go along, every vendor that's coming in is being asked to do everything in there because we just need max, you know, my good friend Max protection in there. Max is a good friend. He's a very good friend.
I feel a Max headroom joke in there, but maybe not. Yeah. Maybe that was just me.
Huh. Right. So, you know, you have your tier three, you know, type of scenario there as well in recovery. And that's the mass restore recovery that you might be looking at. That's where you have to ask yourself, if it comes down to it, how long is it going to take me to recover 50%, 75%, 100% of my data center? And maybe I should be building, maybe I should be sure that I can get that back in a reasonable period of time. Because Andrew, we've gone through these scenarios mm-hmm. with customers. And when they started doing the math, it was weeks before they thought they could really get everything, you know, back.
Revenue generating systems online.
Absolutely. Absolutely there. So you have that. But maybe also, you know, one of the things that, you know, you get more and more is this concept of a clean room.
Yes.
Where I'm going to recover into a clean room. And all these softwares are putting very excellent things to scan backup sets to make sure things are clean before they go into the clean room. Mm-hmm. I just think of like anti-static floors and hazmat suits and things like that for the clean room. But really, it's just about making sure that you're up to speed. But, you know, funny, all of those things, as we talk about kind of the journey and the choose your own adventure, all those are going to require, you know, if you come to the fork in the road and you're looking for performant or non-performant targets, you know, if you come to that, you're going to have to choose something that's going to read. In fact, because everything that all these softwares and all these solutions, security solutions are putting into play, whether it's log analytics or any of that, is going to require a fast read. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. environment. So already we go from a choose your own adventure, you know, back when we started, where it would have been like a 4-page book, to now really having some very intentional, controlled, you know, visibility and control, visibility and resiliency coming into play here in environments.
I think the only thing I'll add on there, and I'll go to the next scenario, only two more, but you know, they're big meaty scenarios. That's the goal, is just, you mentioned speed of restore, and that is so critical. Now it has to be into a clean room environment because we can't just put stuff back into production. But if we can't restore fast enough, fundamentally, we can't even start that iterative process. Right. It's the progress bar we're waiting on before we do the stuff that we want to do. And that's where I think, you know, there's two ways we approach it. And it's even reflected here. You can do it either with amazing metadata, you're just moving metadata, call it a metadata monster, you know, or metadata engine inside a system. It's amazing. Right. Or it's a throughput cannon where you can just move huge amounts of data around. Obviously, if you're thinking, ooh, he just talked about FlashRay and FlashBlade without saying the names, why, yes, I did. But we try to keep the solution focused. But there are products that underlie everything that you just mentioned, what I just mentioned, Jason, that are market leading. Yeah. Next, second scenario. Don't want to forget what we protected against 10, 15, 20 years ago, because that hasn't gone away. And actually, maybe Jason, I may merge these in the interest of time. So maybe kind of a combo for scenario number two of both kind of the act of God or the classic disaster recovery, as well as even the classic backup and restore scenarios, a file or a server. But you want to kind of walk through those as well? And I'll move the slides around or comment.
Sure. I mean, the tiered resiliency still comes into play in a classic disaster recovery site and business continuity. You've got site one, site two, you know, you're transferring data. You're still identifying data. You're identifying those that need kind of asynchronous replication or low RPO, zero RPO at some times. And, you know, addressing it, you had the slide before. Yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. Active, you know, from pure perspective, that zero RPO is, you know, active cluster, you know, on with a mediator and very, very intelligent, you know, sort of
intelligent and simplified there. Capabilities.
Mm-hmm. But with my sites across the country, you know, those low RPO, you know, very latency sensitive. So you may get into a kind of a continuous or active DR type situation where you're getting a near zero RPO, and maybe it's some in between, and also replicating in there as well, and taking on, and maybe you have both, where it's a snap consolidation, where you're bringing snapshots into a place from different sites, or you're doing, you know, regular just kind of asynchronous replication between sites to maintain your classic DR scenario, and also your data control plane software, whatever that is. Is also doing the writing or maybe replicating from one site to another for that tier three type of, you know, streaming recovery, kind of last line of defense type thing in there as well. And that's your kind of your classic scenario, but you're right. You can't just focus on that and not think about what happens when I need to recover VMs. What happens if Sally's file is missing?
That's a big deal. If he deletes a file.
Yeah. And a lot of those softwares do build in some of the granularity to be able to crack open snapshots, mount them, crack them, and index them. So you get that sort of that level of recovery. So you definitely want to look into that as you're planning and as you're looking and whatever you, I know nobody wants to switch their data control plane, look into and seeing what's there, because you're going to need something that's going to be able to provide all those levels of recovery in addition to the hardware platform that you're leaning into in there. You know, you definitely have to be able to take advantage of that. I have some customers that instant VM recovery is something that, amazing, you know, Veeam pioneered 15, 20, you know, almost 20 years ago. And I still have customers that when I'm consulting with them that tell me, well, we don't use that. Well, why? Because they're using, you know, very slow spinning disks somewhere that can't take advantage of that. So definitely want to plan to be able to take advantage of things, take advantage of cyber resiliency, and look ahead to make sure that you're investing in places that are going to give you the visibility control, but also be able to, you know, react and respond in a timely manner as well.
There is, of course, here the always the controversial topic of our snapshots backups. If you would like to explore that more, I would urge you to go listen to the recording last month where Anthony and I actually took that on a little bit. It was just last month. Man, time flies. But thinking through, you know, when you think about this, these are building blocks. And if they follow the restore scenarios and you can move the data around in various ways, maybe we can argue about Fibre Channel and iSCSI next. But
That's a classic question from the beginning of the snapshot era. Can you just rely on snaps? And that's always going to depend on your retention SLAs and everything else. I don't think people are keeping snapshots for 99 years. Like some industries require in there. Or if they are, you know, hey, that's great for somebody.
We historically do not have a problem with longer data retention, I think. And actually, I'll say it both for, I work for Pure now, but even in the past when I was a customer, it's like, I don't necessarily mind that. That's like good job security for me too. You got more data? Hey, that looks like, it sounds like a good problem to have overall for my job security. Okay. Poll number three results. And for those of you who are with us, we do usually target trying to end about 45 minutes after the hour. We'll probably be about 15 minutes. We always stay truly within the hour. We'll have time for some Q&A. Ben and Roger have been doing an amazing job with both answering questions and responding in the chat as well. Poll three results here.
Also, very nice job, Ben. Thank you.
So I will share the results back from poll three. And this is fascinating to me. Focus as much on ransomware attack prevention as recovery. It is evenly split between prevention, recovery, and balanced. Almost evenly split. Yep. And then how many copies of data do you target? There is actually a healthy chunk there that's, you know, I just have the primary copy of the data, or maybe it's ephemeral stuff that you would rebuild anyway. That's definitely a legitimate scenario because it's actually sourced from different places, and then kind of an even split between primary plus backups, or which is really kind of two and three, but even some data bunker represented there. We were showing that on the tiered resilience architecture, and that feels like it maps. Those are optional levels based on your business requirements, not stuff you have to do, but. So that into the last section, which is a little bit of an update. We decided to cherry pick a couple things that for Pure are newer in this landscape or kind of maybe newly impactful. And I think here I'll go first, Jason, and then toss to you. We've only got three items here. The first is I'm pulling out my old joke that someday I'm going to have to retire of, would you like Flash for your entire data center? Not just the high performance databases, not just the virtual machines, but everything. Of course. Well, that's a silly question. Now, the non-silly question is, can I afford it? Not so much. That is where the Pure E family starts to move that dial significantly from a relative to hard drive cost, both on the Flash Array E and FlashBlade E. This is embracing different maximums and different protocols, but fundamentally moving the dial significantly on the cost of Flash. But there's a data set for which this has been really friendly. That's my segue over to you, Jason.
Segue to me?
Yeah. Oh, the data set for which this has been the most friendly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, created this whole thing. Thank you, Pure Storage, for creating a whole line of platforms just for my use case and resiliency. Absolutely. But a great place to take advantage of that. When you look at tier three, in that tiered scenario, and you're looking for, you know, fast recovery and be able to take advantage of that, but also, you know, check the box for a protected repository for my data control plane, the E family's perfection. It's great.
That fits well. It's still Flash. It still has resiliency. Yep. The capabilities, I want to be careful about performance because there's a different level of performance here intentionally because it's a lower price, therefore lower performance. But when we talk about even some of the previous slides, you'll notice what we're not saying here is, oh, it's a different administrative experience than FlashArray or FlashBlade. Oh, it's a different OS. Oh, it's a different replication. Nope. All that stuff is, it's within the FlashArray family. It's within the FlashBlade family. So there's a level of continuity here that is very unique in the industry. Both, this is a unique capability from a cost and performance standpoint, much less it not being this thing off on the side that's this little baby dinky box that doesn't actually have any features and capabilities or resiliency. Next. Ransomware is a big deal. It's problematic. So, protections that are not on by default are less likely to be there on your worst day. So auto on safe mode is really about raising the default level of protection. I'll toss it back to you, Jason, to give some commentary.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, everybody's asking, you know, how are you going to protect me? I'm going to put my primary data. I'm going to put my data control plane backups on. How do you protect that? And, you know, we had a great success year, you know, a few years ago. Andrew, we were at the ground floor of watching safe mode for our FlashBlade repositories. And then the FlashArray team was like, well, we have sort of led that too and expanded the capabilities out and continued to invest in that. Nobody goes backwards in security. Keep investing in it and having auto on safe mode, having things like object lock for our FlashBlade, you know, object lock APIs, freeze locked objects to, you know, for the attack, the overwrite vectors in there, all kind of protection on the bucket and everything else, Andrew, just continually investing in protection for the data that lives in the Pure ecosystem.
Well, the goal here being a lot of intentional thinking about how do we help raise the default level of protection in an operationally non-intrusive way, thinking about the trade-offs carefully, getting a lot of customer feedback, because this scenario, well, ransomware in general, is not getting better. It's only getting worse. So how can we help? Last but not least is one I know that you've poured a lot of time into. Yes. The data protection assessment and the resiliency score. Tell us about it.
As one of the challenges in keeping things simple is being able to highlight and put the hand up to say, you know, like you're just saying, if it is something on in my environment and not protected, is there a level of protection I'm not aware about? And so we built this data protection assessment to highlight anomalies, to highlight, to report on what is turned on in the environment. We've had customers that had safe mode turned on for exception, but it wasn't protecting anything because snapshots weren't turned on. And
you need to put something in the safe to protect it.
Yeah, right. You have a safe, but you want to put something in the safe. Great point in there. So we built an engine, a very easy way to review this with your peer teams and be able to say, hey, my score is 0.2. That's probably not good in there. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but let's talk about it. Let's highlight and take a look at what can be done to add more resiliency and more protection and more options and give you more control over what's happening in your environment.
And I always, this is a fully public venue, so we try and make it feel relaxed, but we can only say so much. There is more coming in this space, so stay tuned. You'll see more. There's more investment and engineering going in that will be released later this year.
I thought you were going to say that I let something, I divulged something I shouldn't have already. That would have, it's totally within the realm of outcomes when I'm on a show, but absolutely in there. Just, it's a great tool to be able to take advantage of.
With that, you might not believe it. We've come to the end of yet another coffee break. It is hard to believe. We're going to do a fourth poll. We're going to do the drawing. And we have a couple great questions there. Ben is typing some awesome answers. We'll probably bring them back live. But Jason, thank you as always for being such a great guest. Any last thoughts to bring us home?
It can be a very complicated continuum when you're talking about cyber resiliency. But make things as simple as possible for you and for your superiors so you can get more projects approved. Get different buckets of visibility, control, reducing the surface area of attack by eliminating duplication in the environment, adapt and recover. You put things in these buckets and it gives you a place to continue to evaluate that cycle. And it also helps you say, oh, this project, this is for my recover budget. This is for my visibility. And it helps the folks that, you know, may be asking you what's going on, see things clearer. That's my last bit on it, Andrew. I walk away at this point.
Well, not quite yet. I'm going to keep you here for questions.
Oh, okay.
I love the visibility.
Yeah.
We got to reduce surface area. It was a nice kind of four-part piece that you walked through there. And I may even have you put that in chat later just because there's a good framework here. And some of this even relates to NIST. We almost intentionally didn't mention NIST frameworks here just because everybody talks about them. And it's not that we don't like them. We wanted to give you something a little different than like, hey, you see NIST a lot of places. So it's good. Okay. With that, Olivia, if you'd be so kind as to launch the fourth poll before we do the drawing. And we were curious, frankly, and we'll let you see this before we end today, of, you know, where you are investing for cyber resiliency. Or If you have an area here that's not reflected, we try to keep the categories kind of broad. It's the four that you mentioned: visibility, control and resiliency, reducing the attack surface area, and consolidation, and fourth, recovery. Please feel free to put that in the chat, because we learn from you. This is how we, I mean, we talk a lot about that stuff, but we learn a lot from the people that we talk to every day. Next month, please make sure to join us again Please make sure to join us for Gen AI. Rag Say What? Going beyond the AI buzzwords to business value, we'll be joined with Miroslav Klavansky, who is an expert in this space. He actually gave me a really good walkthrough last month on what RAG is and pushed my understanding of that a good bit further. So I hope you'll join us for that, because it is a buzzword, but man, there's legitimate stuff there. In case you stayed around just for the drawing, I hope you enjoyed more than that, but maybe you did, and so that's fine. Today's raffle winner is Suresh P from Georgia. We always just do the first initial of the last name. So Suresh P from Georgia, Olivia or someone else from Mark, and we'll be reaching out to you for the Coffee Lovers gift set, a Yeti mug with a Metropolis coffee bag. And I think with that, we are into questions and answers. Ben has been doing an amazing job, and Roger as well. There were a couple that they highlighted here, so I think I want to pull those up, and then I'll go back and do a little bit of dealer's choice. Maybe the first one is Ben. This is actually from Ryan W. Just in case you don't want your last name on here, a question about the solution for full backups in the hundreds of terabytes or petabytes of data that doesn't dedupe well for long term storage. So this is where. Is that a disk discussion? Is it a tape discussion? Maybe even, right. Let's be real, does tape still have a place potentially? Maybe disk doesn't, but tape does. So I'll just ask you to kind of embrace the large scale backups with maybe even 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Over to you.
I feel like, you know, what is the expectation of recovery for some of these in there? Because if there's a cost, there's going to be a balance. It's a huge footprint, but the expectation is you have to have this data back in place in a certain amount of time. That is a cost that's going to have to be reconciled to that outcome in there. Otherwise, no, it's a checkbox and we simply didn't do it. Then maybe it is looking for the least expensive possible target. And, you know, tape's still out there, Mr. Miller. Tape's still out there. And, you know, with Pure Storage, because it reads so fast, it can actually keep tape heads busy on things like Oxcopy. Just saying.
But did you say Oxcopy?
We don't put that on the. We're not going to put that on the website. But we have customers that have come back and told us that, because of the fast reads off the primary, you know, I send it to a flash blade and then write it off the tape. It actually keeps the heads busier. So less downtime, less restart. Good stuff. That's, just saying.
For those I think you heard it here first. Tape
technology. There you go.
The best way to optimize your tape drives is with a very fast, resilient, random read optimized tier in front of them. I think I got enough buzzwords in that. Okay, next question.
The answer is still flash. How about that on a Pure show? The answer is still flash.
But still a soft spot in my heart for my Overland Super DLT library.
Absolutely.
So that made me happy. Okay.
Duck, here comes the robotic arm. Sorry.
So, and yes, to Ryan, I mean, it is about the requirements, and I try not to do that depends, but yes. Okay. From Bill R, with FlashBlade, or maybe I'm going to say when you use FlashBlade, because not if, when you use FlashBlade as backend storage, you know, the target where the data is landed for Commvault or Veeam, can the storage be made immutable? Would you like to take that?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, you can. You can give a virtual, yes. You know, yeah. What's that? Go ahead.
Yes, the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. I guess time-wise, yeah. Yes. There you go.
Sorry, I should have just gone. So, and even can. There.
Yes, absolutely.
Bill, so this goes into both snapshots on Pure that are always immutable. So actually, the snapshots are always immutable. You can't turn that off. And then even if someone compromises the administrative credentials on the system that's storing the backup data, we can help protect against that scenario too, even if it's Commvault or Veeam data living on the Pure system. Please reach out for more discussion there.
Protects you from my favorite line, cyber criminals, the angry admin, compromised admin, and of course, being in the state of Florida, no offense to my fellow Floridians, home of the accidental admin. We protect against guys like me. in there. I'm a guy like me.
I think the last, I'll take one last one here, and then I'll, I think I'll answer this with, all right, Jason, I'll tag in, then we'll share the pullback. Yep. Is from Tony S. Is there a mechanism in place that checks the snapshots for data that has significant changes in encryption or ransomware? The reason this is near and dear to my heart is actually Pure has some patents around this capability. It's in Pure One today. It's called anomaly detection. My name is on some of those patents, actually, where we can actually track and give visibility around major changes in data reduction between as over the course of the data on the array, because that could indicate encrypted data. Maybe even just like maybe DBA decide to encrypt a database. That's good to know operationally. It could also indicate a ransomware attack as well. So yes, there are pieces there and even more improvements coming in that capability. I'm always careful about how we advertise this feature, because sometimes you'll see other companies saying like, this will prevent attacks. No, it gives you better visibility and faster times to know what points to restore from. It's a whole long, good conversation. Tony, please reach out to your peer team if you'd like to hear more there. With that, I will end and share back the poll just for anyone who is curious about where folks are investing. So what I'm seeing here is, you know, a lot of control and resiliency, and reducing consolidation, recovery, all areas that Pure can help you with. Please join us next month, myself and Miroslav Klimansky. And with that, thank you so much from the entire Coffee Break team. Myself, Jason Walker, I hope you have a great week, a great month. We will see you next month. Thank you again, Jason.
Bye, everybody.
Well, that is a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Andrew Miller and the great Jason Walker on this first Coffee Break Rewind. Really excited to have put this out. And as long as that program keeps going, we will keep doing that. Look forward in the future for more episode content coming out, including Unplugged, Coffee Break. And if you are going to Accelerate, just know that Andrew, JD, and I are doing an Unplugged live at the event on the Friday, June 21st, I think. So super, super exciting. But as always, thank you for listening. Tell a friend, tell a colleague, and we'll keep the great episode content coming, like the Coffee Break Rewind. And with that, we will wrap this episode for Pure Storage, Coffee Break Rewind, Andrew Miller, and Jason Walker. This is Rob Ludeman saying, don't look back. Something might be gaining on you.